Hear the drums echoing tonight. She hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, "Hurry, boy, it's waiting there for you.
It is the Massive Report podcast, brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton, and available at a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you. Head to landgrantbrewing.com for more info. And the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up barcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. www.oldnortharcade.com. Hit it up. Episode 254 of this distinguished podcast, final for this 2017 season, at least scheduled. We're recording here on Monday, the 4th of December, for you just a little less than a week after Columbus Crew season came to an end, and we will have a lot to talk about on that front, a memorable season to say the least. We'll be speaking with Ralph Schudell. Ralph, how are you doing, sir?
I am ecstatic because, unlike Anthony Precourt, a business wants to move into Columbus, meaning that beloved-based Akron Swenson's is looking at putting a drive-through just minutes away from my house, so that could be some bad news.
Bad news in a good way, so we're looking forward to that. We've also got Alex Stanek with us. Alex, how are you doing, sir?
Save the crew, baby. Let's do this.
Right answer. And Sam Fahmy on the ones and twos. Sam, how are you doing?
Actually, I left the ones and twos to Ralph tonight because I'm operating on little sleep. And so is Ralph, too, so this could be a total shit show.
He's not lying.
You say that like it's something different every other week.
Already ruined our G rating.
I only pushed it up to PG-13. I think we're still okay.
Well, we do things that aren't okay. Columbus Crew right now, season over after a disappointing 1-0 loss up in Toronto last weekend to fall in the Eastern Conference Finals, short 1-0 on aggregate as TFC advances. We got a rematch of a really thrilling MLS Cup from 2016, so I'm just really eager. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, a little bit. There, we were waiting for those sound effects.
Yeah, this is one of those times where I miss having the sound effect board. Maybe I should talk to Morgan about that.
Yeah, we'll borrow it for. But we will we'll recap that action. We'll look and just take a nostalgic look and travel back down the path of the 2017 season. Again, a memorable one, to put it the most diplomatically as we can. But certainly a season that I think this team maybe outperformed a number of people's expectations, and we'll look back at some of the growth that we've seen from this team and get maybe some speculation on what we think we might see in 2018 and what could end up a lame duck season for Columbus Crew. But we'll touch on that a little bit later, too. But first, let's take us back to last Tuesday in Toronto. Columbus coming into the game with maybe an advantage, albeit they didn't score any goals in that home leg one. You had the away goal advantage, but unfortunately unable to take advantage of it, as Jozy Altidore scoring the lone goal for Toronto to punch their ticket. But not a game without any lack of controversy either, though, Alex.
Yeah, it was kind of a strange match. I thought we had the chances that we needed to put the game away. There were the occasional penalty shout that I thought were kind of half chances. I mean, there was nothing that really screamed for sure penalty to me. But we just did not get the job done. I thought our finishing was poor. I thought Ola Kamara could have had one or two. And we just didn't get enough done to get the result. I thought some of the missed chances from that first leg kind of came back to bite us a little bit. Toronto didn't offer a whole lot going forward except for a handful of moments. Had we got a better result in Columbus, I think we would have got away with the win I think we would have gone through in Toronto. But yeah, it was just not a great performance, I thought, against a very good Toronto team. But they left it all out there. The players seemed very upset after the match. I was actually at the airport when they came back to Columbus, and there were a lot of red eyes. Seemed like some of the guys were crying on the plane a little bit. So a tough result for the fans and for the team. But overall, a great season. Had all this crazy crap with Save the Crew not happened, I think we'd all say, oh, you know, great season, can't wait for next year. But given everything that's going on off the field, I think everyone was hoping for a home MLS Cup. And definitely disappointing that that did not happen.
Certainly the case. And you look at a team that a setup that, you know, we didn't maybe necessarily think we'd get, or a little bit of a surprise. We saw the five in the back, Pedro Santos playing out of position, slotted in at left back, but still, you know, created some chances. And again, it was a game where there were some opportunities for this team. You mentioned the shouts of the penalty. I would have also argued that Michael Bradley should have gone off with a red card for the scissor tackle, but that's just me as a homer. Other thoughts just from that game, or general takeaways, fellas?
The big thing that I would say, and, you know, at the risk of sounding like kind of an anti-Columbus guy, was that Pedro Santos really, to me, you know, people want to talk about Jonathan Mensah and how bad or how poorly of a year he's had. You know, other than an assist or two, Pedro Santos really hasn't done anything that he was brought in to do. He hasn't found the back of the net necessarily. He's there. Now, granted, he's a good distributor, but he's no Pipa. The fact of the matter is, I was terrified watching him play out of position. Granted, he didn't get beat necessarily, and I found it kind of weird that Landon Donovan praised the type of game that he had, but I wasn't really impressed by him.
I thought it was odd. You know, it was just, you could tell that I was uncomfortable with it. I understand why Berhalter wanted to go and tinker with the formation a little bit. It has been, after, you know, about three plus seasons of just kind of hammering down with that 4-2-3-1 formation. You saw him maybe do a little bit of a course correction this year with lots of different formations and changes. But this one, I wasn't too crazy about it. I understand wanting to get Pedro Santos in. It seemed like it was sort of contrived, forcing a way to get him in the lineup. And obviously, with Artur out, you had to look at, you know, some other options there. We had Mohamed Abu go in, and I think Greg thought that, you know, you can have these players in the back. Look, if we're able to just play strong defensively against this Toronto team and create enough, we'll be able to punch our tickets. But I think it got away from what was successful for them within throughout this postseason. And I think when you saw them throughout this postseason run, whether it was the second leg against New York or the second leg against Toronto, when Greg got away and when the game plan changed from playing the sort of style that got them the success, that got them that 12-game unbeaten streak, it didn't pay off. And in NYCFC, you had a good enough aggregate advantage that it didn't really matter. But in this game, you know, tied with no goals going into it, I thought it was a little bit of an odd decision.
I think I think Berhalter tried to do to Toronto what Toronto did to Columbus. In the first leg, they kind of came back with that four in the back formation, and that kind of threw the team a little bit off and just kind of made things weird. So he wanted to throw a wrinkle in there that was hoping that he was hoping would kind of catch Toronto off guard and maybe explore some avenues that they didn't have, or create even some avenues that they didn't have before. So I, you know what? I don't know. To be honest, losing to Toronto is not the worst thing.
A historic team.
Yeah. And in another year, we might have said, oh, screw Toronto, blah, blah, blah. This year, I think I'm looking at the whole thing in a totally different way. And people get...
Whoa!
Oh, Ralph! Wow. That's kind of surprising. So, yeah, whatever. You know, it's... This is... I think everybody at least turned it down. I think at least everybody's going to look at this, look back on this, and be like, this was kind of... We played really well for 12 straight games, and at some point it was going to end. And for the fact that it ended at this game instead of the previous game, which, you know, or against Atlanta, gave a boost to the team, gave a boost to the fans. I think it even gave a boost to the Save the Crew movement, considering everything else that has happened. Having said that, Ralph is working the soundboard.
Having said that,
I think the player that I've been most impressed with this season has been... Zach Steffen.
Yeah.
Zach Steffen, I mean, yep. I'm not going to do the clapping like Morgan does, but Zach Steffen has shown that he deserved the spot. He deserved to be a starting goalie. He deserves to be on the national team. I mean, everybody that was watching that game has... okay, you can cut it out now.
Not throwing you off.
everybody that has watched the game has said if Zach Steffen is not on the national team in the near future, then whoever is in charge should be fired. Well, really, whoever is in charge,
it'll be Bruce Arena again.
They all should be fired, but that's besides the point.
On the plus side, Sunil Gulati. We can maybe touch on that a little bit later in the show. But hey, we got something.
Yeah. Well, and I was kind of surprised because wasn't it like a week or two ago that he said he was going to run for re-election, and then now today he comes out and says he's not running for re-election. So,
yeah.
But to put the damper on that, the president of Soccer United Marketing is now considering a run for president. So, you know, MLS may be swinging its junk around even that much more if she ends up becoming U.S. Soccer president. Though I don't know who votes for U.S. Soccer president.
But, Don Garber has a quarter of the votes, I've heard.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see.
Jesus, really?
I can't. That's from second hand, so I don't know exactly how the voting is.
I'm gonna look it up while you guys talk.
But I guess, you know, looking back at this team and this run here in 2017, obviously Zach Steffen's such a big part of that, and he proved it again.
Hold on. Let me tell you something creepy. I just started typing who votes for, and Google auto filled in USSF president.
Oh yeah.
That's always like, I hadn't even tried that. Weird.
It is always listening, man. I've got a Google. It might have been the Google Home in my house now. I did not approve the purchase of it. The lady friend bought it, and now it's listening to everything.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. Carry on.
Sorry, I had to do that one.
Yeah. So I kind of got lost with that one, Ralph. So why don't you jump in?
Yeah. So soccer and things and stuff and kicking the sports ball into the net.
He was talking about Zach Steffen, by the way.
There we go. Yeah, Zach Steffen.
Okay.
Another save on the penalty. He had to have set some sort of record for most saves on PKs this season, especially at least from a rookie. It was spectacular.
It's funny you mention that because there was a graphic on Twitter today and it was showing counting the saves that Steffen made on PKs, including the Atlanta penalty shootout. And I think 2 of 6 went in. Something ludicrous like that for a keeper from the spot. I mean, it's crazy. And they were saying, you know.
He tied the record for 4 penalty saves in a season, including playoffs.
Wow.
So, you know, they say Nick Raimondo used to be the guy to stop penalties. I'm kind of starting to think that title is starting to switch to Zach Steffen. And, you know, I keep meaning to ask him, is there something that the shooters give away, you know, whether they're turning their hips a certain way or if he's just that good at reading body language, but the kid sees the game on a totally different level.
I don't want him giving any of you'd be like a magician. Keep your secrets. Don't say a thing, Zach. As long as it keeps working, I want every advantage that we can have with him.
Agreed. Don't say anything. Ignore just, Ralph's question.
Mm-hmm.
And don't shave your head.
You can you could have just started that with or stopped that with ignore Ralph. You
but
don't
grow,
have to
grow an awesome beard. Just grow an awesome beard, because I think you could rock a nice one.
Absolutely. But so Zach Steffen, obviously one of the real big bright spots for this season for Columbus. Another one of the maybe unexpected bright spots who turned into a huge contributor and a player whose future with Columbus is, well, the chances are murky at best, is Artur, the young Brazilian midfielder who's did not have his – was not purchased at the end of his loan period. Ostensibly appears to be heading back to Sao Paulo in Brazil. I know there's been some reporting on MassiveReport.com, at least earlier or late last week, that Columbus might still be working to negotiate a transfer for Artur. But it'll be a big loss for Columbus if they're unable to keep him. And certainly, though, a player that was a real pleasant surprise and a catalyst for this team all season whenever he was in the lineup. And again, you know, last Tuesday in Toronto, out of the lineup notably, and it made a difference.
I thought Abu did pretty well, actually. I was not super upset with how well he did, but Artur is a great player. He's one of the best holding midfielders, young holding midfielders in Major League Soccer. I think that he has tremendous potential. I think that he has potential to go to Europe someday. If I were him and I was his agent, I would probably go back to Brazil. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to get more looks in as a player in Brazil. And I also think he's going to have more space to kind of play the creative passing style that he plays. He's not going to have to be kind of like an anchor like he has to be in Columbus, but tremendous talent. Great person, great player, seems to keep his head down and work hard. So someone I think can go far in this sport. If we could get him, that would be awesome. But I would not negotiate with Columbus at all if I were Sao Paulo.
And, you know, it's kind of fun, guys, and I think you guys could share the same sentiment that I have, is we've really watched this kid grow up through the entirety of the year, from starting the opening game against Chicago to not seeing snow ever in his life before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just watching him grow and blossom from looking to being that uncertain defensive midfielder that went on in the Chicago game to being basically a rock along with Will Trapp. Those two developed tremendous chemistry throughout the course of the year. And it's just been really kind of special to watch.
Absolutely. And that is one of the things that kind of that irks me the most. You know, we've had Anthony Precourt. This is a pretty hot take, guys. I don't think that when Anthony Precourt, I think he's being disingenuous when he talks about all the investments that he's put toward the team. I mean, I think he's being disingenuous when he talks, period. But you know, with the Artur situation especially, it's kind of like I look at it, especially with, you know, with the loan deal, like with Frederico Higuain. If you wanted to get this done, if you wanted to keep him on this team, you're going to find a way, because with the loan, at least during the, you know, loan period, he's basically got the right of first refusal and with a supposedly, you know, pre-negotiated fee or whatever that might be. And, you know, you guys mentioned that this is a 21-year-old stud. He's a centerpiece that you can kind of build the team around. And you can look at, like, Atlanta. You look at Miguel Almiron, albeit different player, but look at how the league marketed Almiron's signing. And you had, you know, the Players Tribune article about how Almiron is this rebuttal to the narrative that MLS is this retirement league. And that you can bring in young, dynamic players that want to come to MLS to develop and play because it's a high level of competition. And then when it comes, you know, for Anthony Precourt, where he's got an opportunity to find a way to get, you know, get this guy signed long term, suddenly a guy who knows a little thing, you know, a little thing or two about out clauses and exercising clauses, as he's trying to do with this clause that he put in the contract for the team to move to Austin, he can't find a way to break out the bucks to pay Artur. And when you look at it, I know Abu was, they picked up his option, but suddenly Ben Swanson, you know, he's not it within the system anymore. Will Trapp, you got a healthy season from him, but he played markedly better in those games where you had Artur in the lineup for him, where it was able to kind of relieve the pressure on him a little bit. And we got to see some of the offensive skill that Will Trapp, we kind of, I think, thought was there, but didn't really demonstrate it too much through his first several seasons in Columbus. So to just let Artur walk like that, and I don't know what happened on behind the scenes. And again, Sao Paulo, they're going to be a tough negotiator. That's one of the biggest teams in Brazil, one of the biggest teams in this hemisphere. But it's still, I think it was a little bit, again, disingenuous on the part of Anthony Precourt, who's tried to talk, you know, trot up all his huge investments as the team in the team and say, look how much money I'm putting toward that, and you guys aren't showing up as fans, so I gotta go.
I don't think that that's the case, and I don't want to sound like I'm defending Precourt, but the reason I'm saying that's not the case is because there has been talk about Artur going back since July, August. I mean, Sao Paulo was already seeing that he's having a good season, and they had already called for him to come back, or at least play on his heartstring with the homesickness thing. And obviously, we are a team experienced and well versed in players getting homesick.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, his brother came here in August, I think, or late July or August or something like that, and kind of maybe helped. That helped him kind of continue to have a good season to finish off the season. But I think the plan has always been that going back was probably about 75-25%, you know, when it comes to whether he was going to go back or stay. So I'm not going to blame Precourt for this. I'm not going to blame Berhalter for this. I think they found a gem that wasn't getting playing time, and when that gem got playing time and showed that it can play well, the home team was like, yeah, this is great. So can we have him back now that his price has, like, multiplied by 10? Mm-hmm. So, there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my take as well. I would imagine that they're still negotiating for him. It's just going to be a matter of whether or not they can get a price where they feel they can be guaranteed to turn a profit on him. I think that what a lot of our signings have been are basically opportunities to flip players. I think the first one that you saw with this was, oh my gosh, I can't even think of his name.
Giancarlo Gomez.
Oh, yeah. Gonzalez. Yeah. Gonzalez. So we sold to Palermo. And I think since then, I think Precourt and his team have seen, okay, you can make a lot of money doing this. You can make more money doing this than you can even in the regular season. And I think Atlanta with Almiron have kind of made the same determination that, okay, you buy a player, and they paid a decent amount for Almiron. I want to say that they paid $18 million for him or something crazy like that. I think they spent a significant amount on his transfer. But now Premier League teams are talking about signing him. AC Milan were talking about signing him. And the figures that they were throwing around were $25, $30 million. So that's a profit.
And MLS turned those down.
Yeah, and I mean, so that's a profit of – you know, $12 million. That's more than the operating budget of Crew SC right there. So the amount of money that you're talking about is significant. If they can get Artur for a price where they feel like he can spend a season or two here or in Austin, I guess, and then be moved on to Europe, I think that they'll do that. But my guess is that Sao Paulo will be asking a fair amount for him, knowing what he's capable of. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. The thing that always bothered me about Precourt's investment was it was always kind of just surface deep. You know, he said that Greeley said our support was an inch wide, a mile deep. support was a mile wide, an inch deep. They would occasionally buy a billboard here or there, or a newspaper ad, or TV ads, or something. But it was never very consistent. It was never widespread. I'm sure we're going to talk about the TV ratings later today, but there's a large number of people who are interested in soccer in this community, and they were not seriously engaged for a very long period of time. And that's the disappointing part for me on the investment. I think Precourt has done fairly well investing in the squad. He could have done more, but I think the three DPs, I think that's a good sign. And we do have a lot of young talent that they've invested in. So hopefully we can have our tour back for 2019, but it would surprise me.
And with the three DPs, though, to that point, this was one DP for, you know, the crew was the only – it was a shout-out to Tim Myers, who put together the PowerPoint deck for Save the Crew. But you looked at how they were – this was the only team that only had a single DP when there were three DP slots for however many seasons it was, what, you know, three or four. Then obviously this year, yeah, you did suddenly see a little bit of spending, but it hasn't been – it's not like this is a New York team that's had the max three DPs this entire time. I think that they've been overachieving when you at least look at their contracts and
how much guys
are paid.
Toronto finally is getting to MLS Cup back-to-back seasons, and only one of their DPs, their least of their DPs, makes more than the entire crew roster.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you look at other leagues, you've got to spend. I mean, and it'll be interesting, you know, with the CBA negotiations. We were talking a little bit offline about this, but how that'll affect things, if salaries are going to go up when those CBA negotiations coming up, because compared to, you know, what other leagues are paying players, and, you know, what we're looking at the minimums here in MLS, it's really not that much for how much, you know, with Soccer United Marketing, aka MLS, being a $2 billion enterprise, what they're paying players proportion to that is pretty limited. But you know, that being said, you still are happy with what you got from Artur, regardless with a loan. I think to your guys' point, you always are under at least the inference is that they're only going to be there for that one season. That appears to be the case.
I think Artur is going to be the beginning of the shedding of players that don't want to go to Austin from now until after next year. So, you know, the guys that got declined, I actually kind of feel good for them, because I think at least half of them might find playing time somewhere. Brad Stuver will find an MLS job, or at least a USL job. He will have a job. You know, we look at a guy like Ben Sweat, who was cut fairly early on, and he's now...
Swanson? Ben Sweat now.
And now
sorry,
he's playing, and he's starting on a consistent basis for NYCFC. Ben Swanson, I feel bad for the kid, because he never really got a chance. Of course, being a defensive mid when you have Will Trapp on your team doesn't help. So you're not going to get a lot of opportunity when, you know, the guy in front of you is a national team caliber guy. You know, some of the other guys, who else? Who else am I missing in the guys
cuts,
that got cut here?
Cuts were Logan Ketterer, Brad Stuver at goalkeeper, Waylon Francis, although I know there was at least some speculation about negotiations
continuing
with him.
They're still talking to Waylon.
Yeah, but again, in that's a case, it sounds like, at least to me, that they're just trying to negotiate him down and pay him less than what they're paying him right now, which is a couple hundred K, I think.
Which is possible. I mean, he already has a green card, so he doesn't...
Which is good,
He doesn't hit our international slots. Mm-hmm. Rodrigo Saravia, they sent him out on loan. He got hurt. He's pretty much out now. Abuchiani Abinois, never really saw anything out of him. Marshall Hollingsworth played with Pittsburgh for most of the time that he's here. Saro has been hurt for most of the time that he's been here. That's it. That's the whole list right there. So these are guys that are now cut. Now, they picked up some options on people, which usually the options are 1 year, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then you have guys that are going to have options coming up after 2018. And it will be interesting to see how those options are negotiated or what happens at that point. Because, to be honest, I think Austin, whoever ends up in Austin, and it's not their fault, and I feel bad for them, but that Austin team is probably going to be very, very, very hated and disliked by other MLS fan groups.
I don't like the level of, like, kind of finiteness that you're speaking about Austin with, but I do agree with your point there. I think it's going to be, unless Anthony Precourt is willing to really shell out a lot of money, which it wouldn't put it, I wouldn't put it past him, that yes, that team's going to be not only disliked, but not particularly good.
But I don't think it has, I mean, if you don't want to go and play in a city because you realize that it's going to be tough for a few years, and you know that you only have a few years left, I don't think it matters how much money you throw at these players.
Especially like a Pipe Higuain.
Or Pipe, no, I'm talking about somebody like, maybe like Will Trapp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you're literally ripping him and his hometown team to another state.
Or
Alex Crenali.
Or Josh Williams.
Or any of those guys. Justin Miram. No, he's not from Ohio, but his entire family only lives like 3.5 hours away. You know, there are a lot of issues here in which, yeah, some of these players are going to look at it and be like, no matter how much you're paying me, it's not going to be worth it. And I'm a good enough player that I can get another MLS contract with a better, more stable ownership, per se, or where they can go in and almost immediately contribute to any team. So I see some of these players, somebody like Miram, either trying to get a contract overseas or trying to get an Eastern Conference MLS team somewhere.
I've long speculated, and I know, Sam, that you and I talked about this on Saturday, but, you know, I tend to think about the roster purge, and we saw and we talked about, you know, Stuver had a tweet that he said something about good luck fighting for your team, this is your team, or something exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Alex knows it, but the club retweeted it and then immediately took it down once they understood what the context was of the tweet, and, you know, checked the Twitter sphere to see that. But I've long suspected that, especially with Trapp, Crenali, Miram. I know Zach Steffen's pretty well connected with Crenali, so he's kind of almost like a sort of native Ohioan to some extent, and so is Nico Hansen. But I could see these guys not wanting to be included in this initial Austin group if the team does relocate to Austin, because they don't want to be part of something that is going to be negatively remembered in the history of this sport in the United States of America. And I don't think they want to go down with the ship necessarily. So it's kind of interesting to see. I agree with Sam. I think 2018, particularly with some of the roster options that'll come up in 2018, will tell you a lot about, regardless of what direction this is for, you know, the direction the team goes, whether they stay in Columbus or they leave in Austin. Say if they stay in Columbus, that'll tell you a lot about these guys' commitments to the area. Or if they go to Austin, that'll tell you how many guys really aren't necessarily happy with what's going on in the front office.
I just can't even imagine how much it would suck to be somebody like Justin Miram, someone who has no natural connection to the city of Columbus, someone who is a proud Michigan graduate and hates Ohio State with every fiber of his being, who has picked the city to make his home and to make his career, and then to be told, hey, you are 29 years old, you are heading towards the end of your career, and you have planned on spending the remaining years of your career here in Columbus. Oh, and by the way, we're going to make that impossible for you by moving the team. And so even though you want to be a one club guy, the one club that you have spent your career with is leaving, and so you will not have that opportunity. And then you have guys like Will Trapp, who have spent their entire lives being Crew fans. Literally, Julia Trapp, Will Trapp's sister, posted a picture on Instagram of her and Will when they were little kids. Will was probably 4 or 5 years old at a Crew game at Ohio Stadium cheering on the black and gold. I mean, imagine what it's like to be that kid to grow up to captain the Columbus crew and then to have the owner walk in one day and say, oh, by the way, Captain Will, let me pull you aside for a second. I'm moving your team that you cheered for when you were a child, and it's no longer going to be a thing anymore. Oh, and you're going to have to come with me to Austin because I own your rights, because that's how MLS is set up, and you're probably still going to be the captain in Austin. I mean, can you imagine that? Can you imagine? Imagine if the Cleveland Browns moved to Baltimore and they took somebody who was, you know, a lifelong Browns fan and said, oh, by the way, dude, you're going to be, you know, the main star player for the new Baltimore Ravens. Like, it just wouldn't happen. So there are aspects of this that are so cold-hearted that it boggles the mind. And I know I said last week that I don't think Anthony Precourt is an evil man. I don't. I don't even think he's a heartless man. I don't think he realizes what he's doing. I don't think that he has the soccer background. I don't think that he has the sports background to fully grasp the level of pain that he is inflicting on his own employees and the fans here in Columbus. And that is why I wish that he would reach out to somebody, because I honestly feel like if he spent 4 hours talking to people, he would go, you know what? This is screwed up. I can't do this. This is so screwed up. But he hasn't done that. And so this sick gag goes on. But yeah, there is so much messed up about this move.
Well, it is the season that people will stop calling him a snake for a little bit, and they'll start calling him Grinch, at least for the next 30 years or so. You know, and
hey, but the Grinch had a chance. He turned.
Yeah, well, we're still saying here, you don't like my finality tone of, you know, so we're still saying here that maybe his little tiny black heart will, you know, come alive or something like that. So I think to a certain degree, I agree partially with Alex. I think he might have chances to change his mind. I think the problem is that it's not just him. If this was just an owner that's not constrained by other owners or a commissioner or a slimy business manager or CEO like Dave Greeley, you know, I'm betting that at times, and I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here, but I'm betting at times that he might have wanted to change his mind, but he has Garber and Greeley in his ear going, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, for their own various reasons. Garber, because he likes other cities more than Columbus, and Greeley because I honestly don't know what Greeley's motivation is to move them to Austin specifically. I don't know if he has somebody in Austin or he likes Austin or whatever. I don't really care. He likes tacos. But yeah, but you know, but if we look at it from the league standpoint, the league obviously is in collusion with this because they knew from the beginning of this Austin clause, and Garber saw it as an opportunity to be able to move the team out of Columbus like he has wanted to do for a while, and this is going to be it. And, you know, like, there's a sliver of a chance, and anything can happen. This is America. Anything can happen. Hopefully. And we should hope that it's saving the crew.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
A sliver of a chance. Let's be specific here.
That's still, you know, that sliver is a lot better chance than I think most other, you know, let's look at another MLS owner. For example, Stan, whatever, Kunky, or the dude who owns Colorado. Crunky. But you look at St. Louis move, the Rams and the NFL moving to at Los Angeles, and that, you know, I don't think there's ever really much of a chance, and I don't think anyone really put up, and I don't confess to have really followed the entire move there. Too deeply, but you certainly didn't see anything like Save the Crew for the Los Angeles or for the St. Louis Rams moving to Los Angeles. So I do think, and again, because MLS is unique in that their marketing is based so much around Community. If you saw Mortal Enemy of the show's web video log, Morgan Hughes earlier this week talking about the irony about the MLS's marketing of Community, and specifically as we were, you know, talking about a topic earlier tonight with those academy players and what they are putting those player young players through, it is it's quite hypocritical, and I still think that this is a case where you can Precourt and MLS are not winning the PR battle. They're not doing anything that's even getting people that would be undecided or saying they don't have a dog in the fight to bring them onto their side. So right now, it's still, if they can continue to hurt them, and you also look at, you know, one of their big arguments for why this isn't working in Columbus, why the business metrics are down. Don Garber couldn't mention it during the Toronto game last week because his plane was delayed and then he got stuck in traffic, so he couldn't do the pregame interview nor the halftime interview to answer anything. It had nothing to do with not wanting to answer questions about Save the Crew. But instead, you look at the business metrics, and today the Washington Post reported some of those business metrics, ranking the top, I believe, 10 markets for MLS viewership and noting that playoff viewership has gone up 38% year over year from 2016 here to 2017. And what's driving that? Ohio, Columbus number one, and three Ohio cities, Dayton and Cincinnati, also in the top six.
Houston's
not even on there, and they're in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. And they got as far as Columbus.
And I believe no other cities in Texas are on there either.
But it's almost like we actually have soccer fans here, and they just haven't been tapped into by an ownership group that has barely tried.
What?
That happens, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is the thing that's really confusing to me. Don Garber has to look at that and be like, oh, that's interesting. There are a lot of soccer fans here. And this, by the way, has gone back years and decades. Mm-hmm. We had some of the highest World Cup ratings back in the early, early days, which is why Columbus was considered for one of the main mm-hmm. cities to begin with. This has continued for every single World Cup cycle. Columbus has been one of the strongest markets. So there is
not just World Cup cycles. You're talking about even regular EPL. Like EPL cycles. Mm-hmm. Columbus is consistently in the top five.
Yes.
Well, even Euro too. I mean, stuff like that.
Yeah. And so there are soccer fans here, but Don Garber doesn't care, because we are not a huge city or a hip city. And for whatever reason, Soccer Don thinks, oh, it's going to be much more fun to take trips to Austin or whatever. I think other than MLS Cup, I think the last time that Don Garber was in Columbus was when Anthony Precourt actually bought the team. I don't think he's been here any other time.
He was here for the rebrand.
You're right. He was here for the rebrand. So he's been here two other times beyond MLS Cup when he had to be here. And I don't know. I think this whole thing is so silly and sad and unnecessary. That's the worst part about this. If we had no fans, you know, if we were in a Chivas USA situation where we were pulling in 3,000 people, we didn't have owners, no one would buy the team, I would get it. You know, I would say, you know what? This is a bad position. The league's got to move on from this. Fine. There are people lining up to buy this team, and we have so many fans. We're selling out games, and there has been so much new kind of resurgent interest since all this happened that you would be stupid to move this team, and yet they're doing it anyway because Major League Soccer is, in fact, stupid. And so,
how much of it do you think is just like pride and not wanting to accept that you're wrong? And like, you know, whenever there's an argument, you dig in your heels and you either, you know, fight or flight. In this case, it's just like, nope, I'm going to fight this and we're doing this come hell or high water.
It's not about, I don't think it's about pride, and I don't think it's about digging their heels. It's they've gotten embarrassed every step of the way in this, including, hey, look at what Save the Crew did. They did some marketing on their own dime, which probably didn't cost them nearly as much as, let's say, Garber would or Precourt would have put in. They did like basic marketing strategy on their own dime, and look at what effect it has had. Major League Soccer has, there is a pride issue, is that Major League Soccer has basically been embarrassed every step of the way in this process.
Exactly. So that, I mean, that because if you were going to look at this as a kind of impartial business decision, I think you would look at, well, here's what we told them, that we wanted to get a new downtown stadium. They are offering these sites that we can work with here, and, you know, some opportunities. This has been something that has really backfired on us. If I'm Don Garber, and I've said this on the podcast a couple times, and if I'm the other owners, I'm saying, why am I sticking my head out here for Anthony Precourt when we could find there's obviously local groups here that are invested in this, and if we really want to move forward with trying to find an MLS team to Austin, we can get money off of them. They've got, you know, they as it was revealed in the Austin City Council, that there are other investment groups that are trying to bring an MLS team to Austin. There's the USL group. Get them in the next round of expansions, but capitalize on this cynically as a chance to, as you mentioned, Alex, there's this kind of renewed vigor for the team. Capitalize on that to come in and say, nope, you're right, we saved the team and we're going to get our flashy new downtown stadium and we'll go and pursue Austin in other different ways. We can now market the Hell is Real Derby and give Cincy a team. I think if you were just going to take it as a business decision, you would keep this team in here in a heartbeat.
Well, one thing that I think is interesting, I am slightly in, maybe this is jumping to conclusions, but I'm of the opinion now that they might be a little bit afraid of Save the Crew,
mm-hmm.
and afraid of the power that Save the Crew is wielding. And the fear might be that if they cave, Save the Crew will be kind of the blueprint for every other team going forward if they have to move other teams. And I think they should be afraid of that. But I also think that's going to happen either way. And what I don't think Don Garber realizes, and what I don't think Anthony Precourt realizes, is that we aren't going to stop if they move the team. Anthony Precourt and Don Garber could announce tomorrow that they were moving the team to Austin. We aren't going to shut up until the end of the season. And then even after that season's over, we're still not going to shut up. We're going to be here 10 years from now making noise if you take our team from us. But I don't think they realize that we are not going anywhere. They are going to have to block us all on everything. And they're going to have to get all the journalists in MLS to block us on everything. And they're going to have to find some way to keep us out of their hashtags. And they're going to have to find some way to keep us from collaborating with other supporters groups if they have problems with MLS. They're going to have to keep us from working with the MLS Players Union to fight for tougher things mm-hmm. with their next CBO, which expires at the end of next season.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to quit. They have picked a fight with people who are young and have lots of years ahead of them and who are going to be pissed for life. And so
they have a lot of disposable income.
Yeah. So I don't think they realize what they're getting into still. And I think this is the funniest part to me, is that they think, oh, well, this is just going to blow over. No. You have misunderstood the Columbus fan base from the beginning, Don Garber.
Fundamentally.
Still. To this day, after having been exposed to all of this, still misunderstand this fan base. You think that we are not very tough. You think that we don't really care that much. You know, our team was the hardest working team for two decades. We are the hardest working fan base as well. And we are not going to quit. We will outlive you, Don Garber, and we are going to fight you until you die. We are going to fight Major League Soccer until we die. And so just let us keep our team, and all of this will kind of go away, although we're still going to fight aspects of this mm-hmm. because this league needs to be reformed. There were early days when they destroyed teams. That was probably a mistake. When you look back at some of those franchises, they did not work out that well. They probably could have worked out. But they still, you know, that was in the past. They need to, going forward, have this idea that, you know, the star on the crest that stands for community needs to actually represent that. They need to make a commitment to the communities that they invest in, saying, look, you put your money and your heart and soul into this, and we're going to put our money and our heart and soul into your town, whether that town is Columbus or Houston or San Antonio or, you know, Austin or Cincinnati or whatever. You know, whether it's a franchise now or a franchise in the future, they need to say this means something. And it doesn't to them right now. All it means is dollars and cents. And they want to turn our sport and our league into another major league or Major League Baseball, another National Football League, another National Basketball Association. I mean, we're not going to stand for it. And we're not going to shut up and we're not going to quit.
I don't know why I volunteered to go after Alex, because I can't follow that. That's fantastic. That was, I mean, all the great talking points, Alex. But, you know, it's funny that you guys mentioned this, is that we're going to be getting into a round of expansion here where we find out in a little bit less than 6 days, you know, who's the next round of teams that are in. And presumably FC Cincinnati will be in. Presumably, you know, you have Nashville. And I forget the other two spot teams fighting.
Detroit and Sacramento, I believe.
Detroit and Sacramento, which, you know, it's like, Precourt's from the Bay Area. Just go to Sacramento. Go away, dude. But anyway, you know, I find it really interesting. I think depending on how this round of expansion goes will dictate also how this move or this attempt at a move will go. You know, I agree 100% with Alex. I think everything Alex said is correct, and it's just there's going to be fight. People are going to keep fighting. I haven't seen it. You know, I didn't understand the grasp of it until I became involved with the whole movement, you know, within the last week or so. And there are some very talented people doing some really, really cool things that, quite frankly, are going to get the masses excited, even more so excited than they are now. And it's a powerful phenomenon. It's kind of intoxicating to be around, guys. I mean, the fact of the matter is the Save the Crew movement is pretty damn special.
Here's the thing. A lot of people try to, you know, compare this with the Browns movement. And yes, the Browns is a long and historic fan base. And what happened to them obviously was complete and utter crap. I think the biggest difference really between what happened with the Browns and what is happening now is that this is a different time period.
Mm-hmm.
We have social media. We have access to a lot of information. Most of it is incriminating to the league and to the ownership than Browns fans did back then. We have a lot of different strategies that make this a worldwide ordeal versus just a local city ordeal. And I think this is what has even given the movement that much more strength, is that this became an issue that is reported on worldwide, and the world is watching what steps MLS will take. And MLS continues to be, like we talked a little bit earlier about its pride, MLS continues to be, oh, we are older, we know what is better for you. And to be fair, most of the people that are fighting this are older than MLS. And yes, they will live fairly a long time after the people that are making decisions now go on to a different life, shall we say. So I didn't want to say better life, because God knows I'm not going to judge them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, history will judge them. And history will judge, and history will look on the Save the Crew movement, and it will look on how it affects. If this movement does not affect the immediate future of the Columbus Crew, this movement will affect the long-term future of MLS and soccer in America because of what has taken place in the last 2 months or so. And it's going to be significant. It's going to be significant in how U.S. soccer elections come up, mm-hmm. you know, in presidency, in whether somebody sues MLS and U.S. soccer in front of FIFA to institute pro and promotion and relegation. There could be a lot of very significant changes in the next 2 years, or I'll say in this cycle between now and World Cup 2022.
Well, and one other thing, and I had briefly mentioned this in my rant, and I apologize for ranting two episodes in a row, but I think one thing that MLS needs to think about as well is the impact that this is having on fan bases outside of Columbus, in terms of how cynical they view the league, how much they trust the league. I think this has really damaged the credibility of the league and the good faith nature of Major League Soccer in promoting a, you know, fair and good sporting league for this country. And the CBO for Major League Soccer ends at the end of next season. There will be a new CBO before the season after this coming season starts. Before Austin plays a game, if they do move the team, there will be a new collective bargaining agreement. And what they counted on last go around with this thing was that fans would not get on their case, that fans would not demand free agency for the players, that fans would not demand over $100,000 minimum wage for the players, that fans would not demand this and that. They have burned so many bridges with so many fans. And if they go ahead, did I say CBO? I meant CBO. If they go ahead with this, you are going to have so many fans saying, you know, I don't trust your numbers. I don't trust it when you say you're losing money. You said that no one cared about soccer in Columbus, and we knew that was a lie. You said that this was the only option, and we knew that was a lie. You said that Columbus presented no proposals and no offers in the meeting, and we knew that was a lie. So why should we trust you when you say that you are losing money? Soccer marketing, whatever it is. I can't even think of what that soccer Unlimited
United marketing. Yeah.
Is worth $2 billion right now. And the head of marketing for that organization, the person in charge of monetizing this sport in this country, is now running for the presidency of U.S. soccer. There is a big pushback against stuff like this, but you're telling me that a $2 billion organization is losing money? An organization that has increased in value by multiple times, you're telling me that they're not going to want to pass a significant portion of that on to the players? It will be my mission in life, if they move our team, to make sure that those players get every nickel and dime from these owners. If they're going to steal teams in order to get bigger profits, then they better pass on those profits to those players. You know, and I hope Ethan Finley just destroys them in those negotiations. And there are going to be just as many people from Save the Crew, except from every team, saying, hey, we want our players to get paid too. We don't want our rookies only earning $80,000 a year. We want them to earn, say, $150,000. You know, why not 150,000?
Because that's becomes the difference in the way that you build this league and make this into a league that is a world-class league. You pay for world-class talent.
Yeah. And it's not just about squirreling away profits under your seat cushion and then saying, oh, well, thanks for the money, guys. I'm so sorry. There is not enough profit in this town for me anymore. I got to go. I got to move to another hot market, where I'll stay for God knows how long until it's not hot anymore, and then we'll move again. When they cut off expansion in this league, you're going to see a lot of owners looking for profit elsewhere, and it's going to come in the form of moving teams around, just like it is right now in the National Football League. And we're not going to stand for that. As American soccer fans, we are not going to stand for that. And so if that's their business model, then they better come up with a new one real quick, because we will ruin their day. Like, we are going to make their lives a living hell if they think that's what they're going to get. And it's not just our fan base. It's every fan base in this league. So you guys, if they think they're going to just take this team and we're all going to go away, they have another thing coming. And they probably won't realize until it's too late. But boy, are they going to realize when it's too late. I mean, they are going to have a very rude awakening when they are saying, oh, I'm sure this is going to die down any day now, right, guys? I'm sure just another week or two. They've been saying that for a month. They're going to be saying it for years. And yeah, watch out.
And I think it just also makes it that much more poignant, because you mentioned, you know, that strategy, look, you know, go move to like the new bigger market, flashier market. But again, to go back on that top 10, and this is just one playoff, but you had two teams in the New York area that made the postseason, and New York with 11 or so million people, 10 times the number the Columbus MSA has. isn't on that list. You look, it is, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, you know, how soccer and soccer fans and supporter culture, it is sort of kind of countercultural against the mainstream. And you look at the cities on those lists, and they aren't the largest big cities. There's not, Chicago's not even on that list. Granted, you know, they got knocked out pretty early on, but it's still, just because you think you can make more money somewhere, it's for these guys that are supposed to be these savvy businessmen and you know, hedge fund investment geniuses, sometimes recognize when you got a good thing and, yep, you might be able to get more money somewhere else, but you might also fail spectacularly. I mean, look at how much NYCFC still doesn't have any chance of getting a actual soccer-specific stadium or even something that feigns looking like a soccer stadium-sized thing within the New York City, Manhattan area, Bronx, or anything like that.
FC Miami Beckham's United mm-hmm. still doesn't have a team.
Yep.
And they're just on hold.
And Miami teams
and
MLS
never is willing to hold that forever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about metrics. It's not about anything other than Don Garber does not like Columbus. And people can argue with me all they want. You know what? This market does have soccer fans if anybody actually marketed the team in the time that it's here. This team has not lacked players, has not lacked championship, has not lacked following. This team has lacked marketing. And I say this having covered the team for 10 years. Outside of the rebrand campaign, which was phenomenal, and it was the best marketing I've ever seen.
Outside and driven by fans again?
Well, no. The team actually put quite a bit of effort in the rebrand campaign. They really did. And they held it tight to the vest, and it came out really, really well. Outside of the rebrand campaign, there has not been anything even remotely close, whether it's marketing in billboards, newspapers, radio, or whether it's been promotional stuff inside the stadium, or whether it's been, just think of anything. And then you have a group of fans that has so far executed a brilliant marketing plan in order to try to save the team. So, you know, the fans don't have the same resources that the team does, obviously. But they have done what they can. And look at what a little bit of marketing has, how far that has gone in just 2 months. When this team has not been, whether it's Hunt Sports Group or Precourt Ventures, this club has never been marketed on a scale that is strong enough for it to continue, for it to grow, period. Outside of the first year of the club, you know, the beginning of MLS and the rebrand campaign.
Absolutely. It's a real, again, I think something that they could capitalize on and capitalize on this vigor and try to take all this passion again and bring these fans on board and engage them like this to make them your ambassadors, to reach more people and really, you know, weaponize Save the Crew to your advantage. If you're Anthony Precourt and this, weaponize this group and get them on board trying to sell this team to other people the way that we have. I mean, you know, I think so many people are just taking whatever opportunity, any upper chance they have to kind of spread the word about Save the Crew. And we'd be remiss if we didn't direct you to head to SaveTheCrew.com to look for different ways that you can volunteer to help, whether that's painting. We've still got a Premier League season that's going on, and I want to see a lot of Save the Crew banners around stadiums throughout England and throughout throughout the world here. And also another opportunity with the World Cup. I don't know how many people are going to be heading over to Russia with the U.S. Conspicuously not involved in that game, but or in that tournament, but it'll be still interesting to watch. There's lots of different venues to try to amplify the message in this off season. And the other fortunate thing I think about this is, even though this is going to be the first real, I think the biggest test for Save the Crew is to keep this momentum moving forward throughout the off season. is the fact that MLS is such a short off season. We these players were back practicing in March, and we were playing games by the end of March. So only about a 4 month off season. So we've got a chance to again get the ball rolling again and capture more attention.
Whoa, there we go. Sorry, you know, we were talking about that whole fatigue thing at the start of the show. But, well, even shorter than that, Bart, because, I mean, I think they're – when are they playing the Pacific Rim Tournament? That's what I keep thinking about it. But when they have Vancouver, and then I think there's those two J-League teams over in Hawaii.
Yeah, the season starts at, like, beginning of March, like first or second week of March.
Yeah, but, I mean, they've got these tournaments. They've got that, and then are they going to Carolina again?
I believe so, yeah, doing the Charleston Battery Tournament, whatever that was called. I believe they are on for that again.
I still rest in peace Desert Diamond Cup, but
I thought they were going to Hawaii.
Yeah, they are.
Maybe.
They are going to Hawaii, and then it's the Carolina Challenge, whatever.
I might have to make a trip out there for the Carolina Challenge. Charleston Battery, shout out to their fan base. They were some of the first on board with Save the Crew. And they were they had signs at some of their games late in the USL season as well. So, you know, shout out to them and looking forward to that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the Pacific Challenge one too, because now that I think about it, I have an aunt that's in Hawaii and lives really close to Aloha Stadium, so maybe I will. But, yeah, you know, like you guys said, that's the great thing about this game is that there's such a short turnaround time that, you know, I was thinking about it today, like, what are we all going to do in the off season? Well, it's like, you know, we'll be back in the 2018 season pretty soon before you know it. You can blink an eye and stuff. But, yeah, I wanted to ask you guys, too. That was one of the big things was, did you guys have a particularly favorite moment in the 2017 season?
Oh my God. this is the crazy thing is because the season has almost not existed for me post announcement. Okay. It's almost like the soccer has not mattered and that I would sacrifice all of the crap that happened this season, good and bad, to just not have that happen. And so it's hard to pick one. I guess if I have to pick one, I would say it was probably Adam John's penalty against Atlanta. Okay. Winning the penalty shootout against Atlanta was probably the moment for me. But I just don't – even when we had the semifinal or the Eastern Conference final first leg in Columbus, I basically did not care about the match other than the impact it would have on Save the Crew. That was it. I didn't care about trophies or anything like that. I cared about saving the club. And so it's hard for me to think back to those moments in any other context than what's happened. I think I would say the John penalty though.
What about you, Bart?
Yeah, you know, for me I'm somewhat in the same boat as Alex, but I wouldn't put it as a moment, but that leg one against NYCFC, the first game in Columbus post the announcement, and just that environment, and you know, as opposed to leg one against Toronto, where you kind of felt like it was pent up, and boy, if we'd gotten that goal, that place would have exploded. It did explode against NYCFC when we poured it on 4-1. So I would have to probably go with that game as memorable a experience and game that I've spent in Mapfre Stadium as I ever have, you know, throughout all the other playoff runs and Dos Acero games. That one's one I'm never going to forget.
Mr. Fahmy, you and I are privileged to experience this from a little bit of a different angle. What do you think?
It's kind of hard, like Bart said, it's hard to top the home game against NYCFC, the first game post-announcement and with Precourt being there, and the amount of energy in the, air quotes, 14,000 that were there. you know, that is a feeling that I don't think will ever go away. It's that feeling of anxiousness and anger. And it was good for the team to have just exploded all over NYCFC. And it was good for the fans to get out some pent-up anger in the presence of the person that they're angry at. So I think that is right there. My, like, 1A is Zach Steffen stopping the Larinowicz penalty, more because I hate Jeff Larinowicz. but that picture from the TV cap where the Save the Crew banner is, like, right behind his ear, as he's, you know, that's what it basically in Zach Steffen's eye line, sight line. And that's, I think, just this, that penalty shootout in front of Atlanta. And then honestly, really the fans around the league and around the world that have come to the Crew's aid and the Crew's voice, or the Crew fans' voice, to show their support and to show that, good grief, this is 2017, this should not be happening. And also show MLS that this is not how soccer is. Soccer is about community, and you should probably take that star out of your crest because you don't deserve it.
Shove it up your butt. Anyway, for me, guys, I think I'm going to take it in a little bit of a different direction. I'm going to take it all the way back to March 25th of 2017, when the Columbus Cruisers SC welcomed in a Portland Timbers squad into the Tiny Demon Fortress for the first time since MLS Cup 2015, which I've been told has never happened before. But when I just have real special memories of that, you know, Darren Esprit scoring in the first 5 minutes and you're sitting there thinking, oh God, not again, here it comes. But, Justin Miram getting the equalizer in the 11th, Ola Kamara, and then the boy, Nico Hansen, went in the game in the 84th minute. Columbus Crew SC, you know, for me, guys, in that particular memory, felt like they won a championship, for a lack of a better term, because we exercised the demons that seemed to have been haunting the team from the 2015 and the 2016 season. I think that really helped get the season off onto a great start. And I don't want to really say that that was the game that was, you know, pivotal in turning the 2017 season and making it a great season. But I think it was a good start. Great prospects. I believe Krenali played wonderfully against Adi that game. Obviously, you saw Hansen come on and he did a great job. And Zach Steffen was still growing up. So I think for me, if I had to have a 2017 memory, it would be the victory over Portland.
Absolutely, all good ones, and, you know, reminders that regardless of, you know what the outcome of next season and what the outcome of this play by Precourt and Don Garber to attempt to relocate this team, we do have 2018. It might be all we've got, but we've got it. They can't take that away from us, and this Columbus team, the core, as Massive Report, you know, pointed out earlier this week in an article, it's still a strong core. Even without the likes of Artur, you're still returning the big names, the designated players, Justin Miram. You've got Pedro Santos for a whole year. You're going to have a healthy, recovered Alex Krenali, Lalas Abubakar with additional years experience. Nico Hansen, who, you know, after that injury he had about midway through, we never really got him back, you know, back to 100%. Suddenly he's going to be 100%. So lots of reasons to be excited about this team's prospects in 28 on the pitch. And certainly a lot to be excited about for Columbus fans and our prospects to try to save this team because of how mobilized and how engaged this movement has been to help save this team. I'm still optimistic. And that's also part because we've got great corporate supporters like our great friends at Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and online at landgrantbrewing.com. And of course, our other good friends, the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, and online at oldnortharcade.com. They have been terrific, so good to us. and many other fans and supporters throughout this year supporting this podcast. It's been so great talking with you guys all year long, along with other friends, Patrick's, Ghoul Dan, and Murphy, and all the guests that we have had. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you guys. I don't know if anyone else has any other parting shots or other moments that they want to throw off before we wrap up at least this season's edition of the Master Report.
Likewise, gentlemen, I want to thank you guys personally for taking a new guy on and allowing me to come in and say some stuff that makes some great sense and some stuff that makes you kind of want to bash your head into your steering wheel if you're driving to work.
I think that's the sign of good content. Alex, Sam?
I don't know. Parting thoughts for me, the thing that I'm going to think back most about this season is not even anything that happened on the field. It's not even pre-court's announcement. The moment that is going to stand out to me the most was when we were at City Hall and we were up on that stage singing "Wise Men Say Only Fools Only Fools Rush In, But I Can't Help Falling in Love with Crew." And everybody there, 2,000 people were screaming it back. And then everybody did the Columbus chant. And there was just a sense of community that I have not felt in my entire life. And I was born and raised here. And I'm not sure I'm ever going to feel that again. It was one of the most powerful moments in my life. I don't know. I just felt this brotherhood with everyone who was there that was incredibly powerful. And I am still incredibly optimistic that we will keep our team because of that power, because of the strength of these people working together. And we are working. I promise you we are working. And everybody is working to try to save this team, do everything that we can. And we're going to go down fighting if we go down, or we're going to save the crew. I think we're going to save this team. But what an amazing community we have here in Columbus. And it's a blessing to be from here. It's a blessing to live here. And we'll be fine no matter what. But I really, truly, truly believe that that we're gonna save this team.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think about the only, you know, feeling that might surpass that is when we're all in front of City Hall, you know, sometime next year, chanting, arms locked together around shoulders of strangers, singing "I Can't Help Falling in Love with Crew," because we've saved the team, and it's going to happen. This isn't over. Sam, anything else from you, good buddy?
Can't really add to what you guys already said, so let's blow this popsicle stand and see you guys next year.
Absolutely. Yeah, on behalf of Sam, Ralph, Alex, or other massive reporters, Bart, wishing you and yours a very happy holidays and save the crew. We'll see you next week, next year, buddies. Bye.
The wild dogs cry out in the night as they grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right, sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.